It's Stuart Allen speaking from Wilson Street Chapel, the Chapel of the Open Book, London. We are considering rather an unusual subject, and that is the obsolete or archaic words in our authorised version. This is important because, as we've seen, language is always changing. Old words drop out, new words come in, and not only that, but words in current usage change their meaning. Now, for 300 years, we've had this fine version, and it is a fine version, of course, but it's not a perfect version. There is no such thing as a perfect translation. But during 300 years, the English language has changed in many respects, and in some cases, even so far, as a word meaning exactly the opposite of what it meant in 1600. Now this is important then, because if we want to know God's mind and will in His Word, we must get a translation that conveys the sense. And we saw last time in such phrases, anon, and by, and presently. They've completely changed their meanings. Today, we mean later on, by and by, presently. Whereas in 16, they meant straight away, immediately. Just the very opposite. Well, now, unless we know that, in the passages where these phrases occur, we shall get quite the wrong sense of the passage. So this is important from the standpoint of teaching, from the standpoint of doctrine. So I'm not going to apologize for taking a short course on some of these words. We're thankful, of course, that the majority of the authorized version is still understandable. Anybody who can read Shakespeare shouldn't have any difficulty with reading the authorized version, of course. Sometimes we're told that it's quite impossible for young people to understand the English of the authorized version. That, I think, is quite silly. Because, generally speaking, yes. But just occasionally, here and there, they do want some guidance, and then a modern version, a good modern version, can be very helpful. They should be read side by side with the authorized version and not replacing it. Side by side with the authorized version, and then quite a lot of light and blessing can come. Now there are two words I want us to start today with. They are two words which in English have changed their meaning, apparently and evidently. I pointed out too in a previous study that nearly always, practically without exception, a word degenerates in its meaning. You can just very occasionally perhaps find a word that's obtained a higher meaning in the course of usage, but very seldom indeed. And I believe this is only just an example of the fallen man. Whatever he touches, he spoils. And you find this, of course, even with the words that he uses. Now these two common words, now in English apparently and evidently, were originally strong words, but they've lost their strength. They originally meant to see clearly with the eyes, whereas now apparently means seemingly. He did this apparently. We're not quite sure about it. It looked as though he did it. Never used like that in 1600. Or evidently is an inference, rather than definitely seeing something. Now both these words occur in important passages in our authorized version. I'm going to turn you to one in the Old Testament, Numbers chapter 12. God speaking concerning his relationship with his people, Israel, and Moses especially. Verse 7, Numbers 12, 7. My servant Moses is not so, who is faithful in all mine house. With him I will speak mouth to mouth, even apparently. Here it is. And not in dark speeches. And the similitude of the Lord shall he behold. I will speak with him mouth to mouth, even apparently. Not seemingly, not as though I'm going to do it, but it won't be real. No, this is going to be, it'll be seen to be. So, I'm going to speak clearly to Moses, with nothing in between. Or, let's have one reference, there are plenty more, one reference in the New Testament, in the book of the Acts, the 10th chapter of the book of the Acts, the vision that God gave to Peter, so that he might realize now that the program was widening according to Old Testament prophecy, and the truth was going up beyond the confines of Israel to the Gentile. And this, of course, was nothing secret. This is what God intended from the very start, that it should be so. And the Old Testament had made this quite clear. But with the restrictions that God had put around Israel, with the idea of preserving the truth so it might not be corrupted by paganism, they were a people that were consecrated and separated to the Lord in every respect. And consequently, Peter, as a faithful Jew, would have to have it very clearly made known to him that he was to step outside the covenant bounds and go to a Gentile. This is nearly always misunderstood as a little bit of bigotry on the part of Peter. And people say, well, of course, if he was a real preacher of the gospel, he ought to have welcomed an opportunity of going out to Cornelius. No, he had to say to the Lord, I've never done such a thing. I've never touched anything that's common or unclean. Not dirty, he didn't mean. Outside the covenant bounds. And up to this point, he would have been quite right. Quite right, and according to God's mind and will. But God had to show him, and he did show him, through this vision, that now it was his will that the ministry should widen. Now, chapter 10 then, and verse 3. He saw in a vision, evidently, about the ninth hour. Now, how do you read that? He saw in a vision, evidently, about the ninth hour. Seemingly, about the ninth hour. Not so at all. He saw in a vision clearly. This is what he saw with his eyesight or with his mind. This is a clear vision which he had. He saw clearly in a vision about the ninth hour. Not evidently, as much to say, well, just about then would be near enough, evidently, about that time. No, he saw clearly with his eyes in a vision. So be careful with those two words, apparently and evidently. They were very strong words in Old English. Now, just a word about another one which is so often used. But do we think about its origin? The word ark. Little children, they go to Sunday school and they learn about Moses in the ark of bulrushes, or they read about Noah's ark. But we don't talk about arks today, do we? It's dropped out of modern English. But what is an ark? Well, it's just an ordinary wooden or metal chest. Or a box. It's just a common piece of furniture. And that's why, in English, you find it coming over in people's names. Because you know quite a number of names of people came through their trade. Butcher, baker, so on. Well, originally, their trades, of course. Well, now, some of you have heard the name Arkwright. Well, he was a maker of boxes, maker of arts. Wright, W-R-I-G-H-T, is just the Old English, or the Middle English, rather, for a workman. A person who worked. Or if you want the original Anglo-Saxon word, it's very difficult to pronounce, but it's spelt W-Y-R-H. T-A. Now pronounce that, if you can. But you'll see, you can soon see it soon got around to W-R-I-G-H-T. Right, just meant a workman. A common maker of boxes. So, an ark. There's nothing sacrosanct about the word. It's just an ordinary box or a chest. And that ark that was in the tabernacle and in the temple, remember, there was nothing in the fact of it being a box that made it holy. It was what was inside it, friends. Oh, yes. All the things that God put inside and the marvellous teaching that I'm tempted to stop on now, but of course I mustn't. The unbroken tables of the law. The manna. God said when you get to the end of the pilgrim journey, when you've got to the promised land, I want you to take a little bit of that manna that I've given you every day and fed you and looked after you. Just take one of the little memorial and put it inside the ark. And they did. Yes, there's a wonderful teaching inside that box. Nothing in the box at all, as far as the box is concerned, but what God told them to put inside it, yes indeed, full of rich teaching. Now, here's another expression, away with. Let's turn to Isaiah chapter 1. It's quite obsolete today, and we don't use it. The first chapter of Isaiah's prophecy. God is having a controversy with his people. They had the idea, of course, and you find this coming out in Jeremiah, just the same, that if they kept all the ritual going, if they kept all what God specified in the temple, they could be just what they liked. They could sin, they could do all sorts of things, as long as they went through the ritual, that was all right. That put them right with God. That is one of the dangers of ritual. And you know, friends, it's still a danger to those people who indulge in it and feel they must have it. There's still people that think that if they take communion every so often, or our friends, the Roman Catholics, if they go to Mass regularly and so on, and the confessional, but right, it's all right, they can do what they like afterwards. But this makes a mockery of Christianity and of truth. And this people who had the divine ritual, mark you, this was ritual given by God. They went through it and they thought, well, as long as we go through it, we're fulfilling all the conditions. Now see what God says. Verse 13. Bring no more empty oblations, sacrifices. Incense, and he specified this, look, is an abomination to me. The new moons and Sabbaths, the calling of assemblies, I cannot away with. I cannot away with. It is sin, iniquity, even the solemn meeting. Well, that old English expression, away with, corresponds to our moderate English, or our modern English, tolerate. God says, I cannot tolerate it. You bring all these things to me, all these offerings and so on. Truly, they were given by me in the first instance, but the whole thing's empty. It's just an empty shell. Incense, an abomination to me. I cannot put up with it. That's what God is saying. I cannot tolerate it. So, away with means not to put it away like that, but I cannot tolerate. Now, another word. Barbarian. What do you think a barbarian is? Well, you say a barbarian is an uneducated sort of person. You say, oh, he's only a barbarian. You know, that's not the meaning at all. Barbarians could be very intellectual people. In the New Testament sense of the word, they could be very educated people. A barbarian was anyone who was not a Greek. The Greeks, of course, were at one time the chief civilization of the world, and a marvellous civilization they were, in literature and in art and culture and so on. And they looked on anybody outside of that as being a barbarian. That's what they called them, barbarian. The Romans took the word up and used it in just the same way. Anybody who wasn't a Roman was a barbarian to them. Whatever his gifts were, he might be a very clever person, he was a barbarian. Now, let's turn to Romans. The Epistle to the Romans in the first chapter. Where the apostle is dealing with the gospel which had been given to him, and this is what he says. I am a debtor, verse 14, both to the Greeks and to the barbarians. That's to say, to anybody that's not a Greek. That was really summing the whole world up that time. Greeks and anyone that isn't a Greek, a barbarian, whatever he is, whatever his nationality is. I'm a debtor to them all, says the apostle, both to the wise and to the unwise. Not merely to the non-intellectual. Anyone that was outside the Greek culture. That's the meaning of it. Again, you get it in Colossians. In the body of Christ, not a barbarian. That's to say, those that are outside the nation of Rome or Greece, anybody would be called a barbarian. Then, of course, it degenerates in its meaning to somebody that you sort of look down on a little bit and say, oh, he's uncultured, he's a barbarian, you see. That's the way the words change and go down, degenerate in their meaning. Now, take another word which has changed entirely, the word base as an adjective. You see, we use it now with a moral connotation. A person is base. He's not quite wholesome intellectually, a base person. But there was no moral tinge about the word at all to begin with. In fact, it was a very good sounding word. A person that was a base person was to be commended, because the word meant just humble. So if you were a humble person, and that was the type of person that God uses, don't forget that, this is a must. I dwell with one that's humble, contrite in spirit, says God. Yes, indeed. This is a Christian grace that God must have. Well, in that sense, you're a base person. Now, see the way it comes. Daniel, chapter 4. Daniel, chapter 4. Verse 17. This is the explanation of the dream that Nebuchadnezzar had. The matter is by the decree of the watchers, and the demand by the word of the holy ones, to the intent that the living may know that the Most High ruleth in the kingdom of men, and giveth it to whomsoever he will, and setteth up over it the basest of men. Now, not the people of wrong character. God would never set up base people that were wrong morally. He sets up the humblest of men. That's the meaning of it there. Or, come to Ezekiel's prophecy, or go back, I should say, to Ezekiel's prophecy. 29, chapter 29. A prophecy concerning Egypt. Now, this is a matter of interpretation as to whether this remarkable prophecy has yet been fulfilled. But we'll read from verse 13. And remember, too, that Egypt plays a large part in prophecy of the end time. It's one of the lands that's bordering on the covenant land, the promised land of God, the land of Palestine, as we call it, Jehovah's land, Israel's land. And so Egypt is going to play quite a big part in prophecy. Now let's read this. Thus saith the Lord God, at the end of 40 years will I gather the Egyptians from the people where they were scattered. And I will bring again the captivity of Egypt. Now, this is very like language that God's going to do for Israel. They've been scattered. And God says, I'm going to bring them back. And will cause them to return into the land of Petros, into the land of their habitation, and they shall be there a base kingdom. Well, don't you see, this is blessing. You see, this isn't judgment. God isn't saying, yes, they're going to be a horrible kingdom in the end. They're going to be a base kingdom. No, they're going to be a lowly kingdom. And the margin tells you that, Hebrew, low. Low. A lowly kingdom. So think of this word base as being something to do with humility and lowliness. And we should be right. Now, coming on to a word that's completely passed out of English. There's several of them used in our English Bible. This one, besaid. We say instead, but I've never heard of anyone speaking today that talks about besaid. Isaiah, chapter 8. Isaiah, chapter 8. The word just meant originally placed, or situated. That's all it meant in the Old English. Isaiah 8. And verse 21. And they shall pass through it, hardly bestead, and hungry. Well, unless you take the trouble to find out what that means, you'll never understand the verse, will you? Hardly bestead, and hungry. The word then had the thought of being used in cases of difficulty. And here, to make it any sense at all, you've got to try to say hard pressed. That's what it means. hard-pressed and hungry. Hard-pressed and hungry. Or, let's come to another one. Again, which we don't use, but we use a word like it. And some people think it's the same word, but it's not. And that's the English word bewray, which people pronounce betray. Well, it does sound like it, of course. But it's not the same word, and betray does come from it, but it's not the original meaning of it. Proverbs, let's look at first. Proverbs 29. And verse 24. Whoso is partner with a thief hateth his own soul. He heareth cursing and bewrayeth it not. He heareth cursing and bewrayeth it not. Or let's look at Isaiah chapter 16. The 16th chapter of Isaiah's prophecy and the 3rd verse. Take counsel, execute judgment, make thy shadow as the night in the midst of the noonday. Hide the outcast, bewray not him that wandereth. Bewray not him that wandereth. And let's look at one New Testament one too, which again is nearly always misquoted and misunderstood. Matthew chapter 26, Peter's denial of the Lord Jesus Christ. Matthew 26 and verse 73. And after a while came unto him they that stood by and said to Peter, surely thou art one of them, for thy speech bewrayeth thee. Now that's nearly always misquoted, thy speech betrayeth thee. And it doesn't mean that at all. Now, what does the word originally mean? It just means to tell or to disclose something, to make a fact known to anybody, without any thought of betraying at all, originally. Then see the way the word gets twisted and narrowed. When you start to disclose or tell someone something that's secret or very important, then you're betraying a secret. You see that? How it got narrowed down? When you disclose something that you ought not to, that's betrayal. But that wasn't the first meaning. The first meaning just means to tell, or to inform, or to disclose. What these people said, look, your very dialect discloses where you've come from. Not it betrays you. This was, of course, the climax for poor Peter, because twice someone had said to him, look, but you were with Christ. We saw you with him. No, he said, no, don't know him. Why? Your very dialect tells you where you've come from. A Galilean, of course. That's all it says. Your speech discloses where you are from. And poor Peter, that was the last straw. And he went out and cursed and swore and went out and wept bitterly. But what a come down for this great man. And yet how human is the scriptures, that the blemishes of God's saints are not just skimmed over. They're there, put there, because these were men of like passions, as we are. And if they were anything, well then they were made something by God's grace, and not by any virtue of their own. You can still find, of course, and this is quite interesting, some people are quite clever at this, because they have noted very carefully, they listen carefully to people. Even in this small country, you know quite well that the southerner and the midlander and the northerner speaks with different dialects. And of course, when you get to Scotland, well, you know you're in Scotland. And when you get to Wales, you know you're in Wales, you see. And it would seem very extraordinary in a tiny island like this, you could get just variety. And some people who listen carefully can even tell where a person's come from by the way they talk, their accent, as we say. Their accent berates them. Not betrays them, but shows them and discloses where they were born. And that's all the word meant, to reveal or to disclose. Now, another peculiar old word. We'll have to go back to the book of Exodus for this. And the 9th chapter. The 9th chapter. To do with the judgments on Egypt and Pharaoh by the Lord. Verse 31. And the flax and the barley was smitten. For the barley was in the ear, and the flax was bold. Well, do you know what bold means? It means to be in bud. The flax was about to bloom, just coming to its prime, and God's judgment came on it. The American Standard Version actually translates it, the flax was in bloom. Or perhaps we might better say, it was in bud. That's what bold meant. Just a little point, but necessary to know if we're going to have the full force of that passage. I think we've just got time maybe for two more. And these are both in the prophecy of Isaiah. Isaiah chapter 3. This is rather an extraordinary one, because here's a case of an English word completely and absolutely changing its meaning. Isaiah chapter 3 and verse 18. In that day the Lord will take away the bravery of their tinkling ornaments. Well, in what sense can tinkling ornaments be brave? The bravery of their tinkling ornaments about their feet, and their cauls, and the round tires, or tiaras, like the moon. The three old-fashioned words there. Well, this word bravery had nothing to do with moral qualities at all, to begin with, to be brave. It just means feminine embroidery. Feminine finery. That's what God says. All this decoration, so I'm going to deal with them, I'll take them all away, in judgment. The finery, you'd have to translate it now, to get the real sense of the passage. Come on to chapter 30. The end of verse 6, it starts about the burden of the beasts of the south. And it ends in this way. They will carry their riches upon the shoulders of young asses, and their treasures upon the bunches of camels. Well, this isn't groups of camels, this is bunches of camels, to a people that shall not profit them. This is a camel's hump, and it was called a bunch in English at that time. Going to be carried on the camel's humps, the hump of a camel. Now, of course, I will admit that that has no great doctrinal significance, hanging on a passage like that, and it wouldn't matter very much whether you understood it or not. But I'm trying to give an example, or examples of both sides. Some cases where it is important, it's vital, because you can't understand the passage without it. And as far as one can, I think we should try and get the things clear in our minds. Now, next time, I want to start with a word which I think most of us know, but we'll look at it because this is important, and a lot of doctrine is hanging on it. The English word careful. Now, if we turn it round the other way, we should get its proper meaning, full of care. Now, you see, where it's completely changed? It meant to be anxious, to be full of care. Now we say a person is careful. That's to say they're very exacting. They're wise. They're provident. They look forward to the future, make provision. They're careful. That wasn't the original meaning at all. Just the opposite. They were worrying type. They were full of care. And surely one of the things which God wants us to be is to be without care. And the Apostle Paul tells the churches that. He'd like them to be without carefulness, he said. Well, he certainly didn't want them to be careless in that sense. But I want you to be without anxiety. And when the Lord said, Paul said, be careful for nothing in Philippians, he said, don't have a lot of worry. He didn't say don't make provision for the future, that's certainly wrong. But don't be full of care for nothing, but by everything, make a request known to God. So we'll perhaps start with that word next time, look at one or two occurrences which are important. Care, careful, and carefulness. And they all appear in the English version of our Bible in the original meaning, to do with care or worry. So may God just bless this series. I don't want it to be just technical, but I do want it so that we can get to know really what God has written for our learning, because such riches are depending upon our understanding what He's caused to be written, His truth.